Hello, hailed America's most original architect by poet J.R. Lowell, Henry Hobson Richardson's contributions to the field of architecture are many, despite the relative briefness of his life. Though considered a vital point in the trinity of great American architects, alongside contemporaries Louis Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright, Richardson's name is far less known than the former two. Regardless of this discrepancy, he was a man who constantly yearned for more, whatever more was at the time, a characteristic that was both his greatest strength as well as his ultimate downfall. His reputation is most evident in the eponymous Richardsonian Romanesque, a style of Romanesque revival architecture, as well as in his work with public libraries, many of which, contrary to the demolition of some of his other structures, still successfully operate as libraries today. Here with me to discuss Henry Hobson Richardson's life and works are Harriet Lewis, Associate Professor of History at Yale University and noted biographer of Richardson, Francis Wright, Associate Professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the Department of Architecture, and Elizabeth Griffin, Public Librarian at Richardson's Thomas Crane Public Library in Quincy, Massachusetts. Before we turn to Richardson's architectural endeavors, let's get a bit of background on the man himself. Given that his is not a household name like Frank Lloyd Wright's, I'm sure our listeners are keen to know about who Richardson truly was. Harriet Lewis, can you give us something of an overview of Richardson? Why is it that we know less about him than some of his contemporaries? What are we missing?
Well, he was a big man with a life to match. Henry Hobson Richardson was born in 1838 in Louisiana, and he died tragically in 1886 of Bright's disease at the age of 47. His studies originated at Harvard University, which he attended with many of his future clients. When Harvard didn't work out for him, he turned to Europe to continue his studies as an architect. This was unlike his contemporaries, who often studied architecture as apprentices under established architects. Richardson attended the École des Beaux-Arts from 1859 to 1865, and he started his own personal library collection of architectural books here, although due to financial reasons, he could not finish his studies in Paris either. He himself did not write much, but we know a lot about his life and his works from his letters and from what his clients say of him, and of course from his architectural achievements. It was in 1876 when Richardson worked on the Woburn Library in Massachusetts, funded by the Wynne family. Before this, he worked on private manors, offices, schools, and banks. There's the State Asylum for the Insane in Buffalo, New York. And churches, you know, a lot of work in Massachusetts specifically, where he wound up living, such as Trinity Church and Sever Hall at Harvard. He returned to Europe in the summer of 1882 to travel, to reflect on his previous accomplishments, and to gain inspiration for his future projects. He was certainly a man eager for work. He didn't let anything try to stop him. He said once, "I'll plan anything a man wants, from a cathedral to a chicken coop." This is evident in what is regarded as a local legend, although it may very well be true, which circulates around a house Richardson built for his good friend and client, Reverend Brown, solely because Reverend Brown wagered that Richardson couldn't.
Richardson's bet taking isn't surprising. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that he died quite a bit in debt, leaving behind a wife and six children.
Yes, that's right.
Can I turn to Francis right now in regards to Richardson's eagerness and how this quality translates to his architectural endeavors and the architectural landscape at the time?
What we have to remember is that Richardson was completely revolutionary. He influenced architecture greats like Louis Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright. His incorporation of iron framing to make libraries fireproof is cited as influencing the modern skyscraper. It is Richardson we can thank for open planning, ribbon windows, and functional asymmetry, which continue to be utilized as underpinnings of institutional architecture. He was practical in the 1870s and 1880s, where the main concern in architecture was grandiose imitation and ornamentation. Richardson used wood as wood, instead of carving it to look like marble or stone. The pillars and rounded archways atop short columns that are hallmarks of Richardsonian Romanesque are there primarily to support buildings and not necessarily for adornment. Richardson is seen as foreshadowing the functionalist movement. He's truly extraordinary.
Well, there you go. Now, if we can perhaps get a little more specific for our listeners, how does Richardson's revolutionary nature extend to his work with libraries? Can you tell us how Richardson's construction really differs from the way libraries were previously being built?
Library architecture, as we know it now, did not exist until the mid-19th century. The first published discussion of library design in the United States is not seen until 1853. In 1875, fewer than 10% of all public municipal libraries were housed in specially designed structures. When libraries did begin to receive architectural attention, there was conflict between a desire for architectural beauty, usually on the part of the architect, and the interior function needed by the librarian. This is why Richardson is so significant. He bridged the gap between beauty and function. Richardsonian Romanesque buildings are gorgeous, with rounded arches and short columns, but, and this is key, they're also usable. His library designs had ample light, no shelves beyond reach from the floor, and slight alcoves allowing for private reading without compromising open areas. They're simply stunning. I mean, it's no wonder that Richardson's buildings are jewels in the crown of New England architecture.
Jewels indeed. So we know that Richardson's thinking is ahead of its time. It's not in step with some of the architectural tendencies reflected in the works of others. Now, moving away from these structural concerns, Elizabeth Griffin, can you tell us how Richardson's work fits into the functions of public libraries, their mission at the time?
Well, I think in order to really put public libraries into the right perspective, we have to look at how they originated in the United States. Very early in library history in America, there were public libraries that weren't tax-supported or free. These were institutions like subscription or social libraries and circulating libraries. These kinds of establishments operated out of bookshops and rented out individual books for a fee. They started to appear around the 1760s. Rising literacy rates around this time period, as well as improvements in printing technologies that made books more widely available, really helped these establishments gain ground. And of course helped public libraries too later in the second half of the 19th century. Public libraries in North America as we know them now really started with the Boston Public Library. Some of the ideas stated by a man named George Tichenor, who was instrumental in the founding of the Boston Public Library, are really foundational ideas that are still important ideals of libraries today, such as that the library be free and open to all, have an educational mission, circulate books for people to use at home, and have not just scholarly resources, but a range of books that could also include popular novels. The Boston Public Library opened in 1854, and then there were a couple of important movements in public libraries that happened after this in the 1870s, such as the founding of the American Library Association and the start of the Library Journal. The Boston Public Library's foundation you could see as, in many ways, a movement by the cultural elite in society. But these later movements now came from within the library profession itself, librarians adding foundational infrastructure to the librarian profession. Then also the spread of municipal home rule meant that cities didn't need to go through all the lengthy processes to gain specific legislation from their state in order to open a public library. And some states even established library commissions to encourage the construction of public libraries. This real acceleration of the growth of public libraries is the picture into which Henry Hobson Richardson's libraries really fit. Many wealthy elites wanted to make a mark on society and took to donating large sums of monies to cities and towns so that those towns could then build their own libraries, named after the donator, of course. The most famous example of this phenomenon is, of course, Andrew Carnegie and the many Carnegie libraries. But Carnegie himself then influenced many other people to follow in his footsteps. Richardson took money from these donors and designed and built libraries with it. And he actually started designing libraries slightly before Carnegie. So that famous Carnegie style of library was not yet around as influence. Maybe this is why Richardson's libraries seem so distinct.
That is so spot on. The Carnegie-Richardson connection continues to fascinate me and other architectural scholars. Who knows what would have progressed had Richardson lived longer?
If I may, there was a lot at play and at stake in the Western world at this time. There's a widening gap between the rich and the poor, and a fear of warfare in a growing nation, which was expanding both in terms of population and industry. Richardson saw the architecture of libraries, too, in Europe, and he wanted to bring that to life in America with the help of benefactors. Like I mentioned, the philanthropist Jonathan Bowers Wynne left a sum of $2,500 to the city of Woburn, Massachusetts, to build their first public library. Jonathan's son...
Charles?
Oh, yes, Charles. He also left a considerable amount to the library on his death 2 years later. Architects at the time scrambled to have their plans chosen. Richardson was the lucky fellow to work on the project, with more than $225,000 in donated funds from the Wynne family. This was, in fact, Richardson's first public library.
While this may have been his first venture into libraries, it certainly was not his most celebrated. Mm-hmm. The Thomas Crane Memorial Library is considered by many to be his crowning achievement. Very briefly, Elizabeth Griffin, this is the library you work at. Can you touch on how the institution operates today?
Yes, the Thomas Crane Memorial Library was funded by Albert Crane in honor of his father, Thomas Crane, and was designed by Richardson in Quincy, Massachusetts. It's just 9 miles from Boston. This library is still in use today. As you say, it really is a masterpiece, although, of course, I'm a bit biased. Over the years, we've added several additions, and Richardson's building is no longer the main building, but it's very well preserved and now houses a couple of study rooms, seating space for patrons, and the magazine section. Patrons can sit around...
Very sorry, that'll have to do. Thank you, Elizabeth Griffin, Harriet Lewis, Frances Wright. Next week, the history of the American delicacy, the donut. Thanks for listening.